Romans is probably the most theologically rich book. You know, what has God done for us? And it's a long letter. The practical implications are, how are we to love one another well? Hey, everyone, it's John Fanous here with
David Ding.
And we are here for the Fanous Ding Connect podcast. I was listening to last podcast, and I forgot to add the word connect to the illustrious title.
Oh.
I just call it the Fanous Ding podcast.
Well, it's because we were connecting with Ming Chang.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. But I just felt like and you know, as we're kind of wrapping up Romans, how endeared I feel to the creation of this title,
because
I think it was our first podcast. We're like, Fanous Ding Connect or something.
Yeah,
and I took that literally, and it stuck. So, but hey, we are so happy to be with you guys. We are wrapping up our series on Romans. Last Sunday we did an overview of the entire book, but before we dive into that, David, you have an icebreaker question for us.
Yeah, I thought it'd be fun. Who did you want to be when you grew up?
Okay, so this may date me. So those of you who are my age and older will know what I'm talking about. But there was a very, very popular show in the 70s that as a kid, I was totally into. It was a $6 Million Man. Uh-huh. Are you familiar with this, David?
I know the title, but I...
Have you heard of like The Bionic Man?
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, it was a story of an astronaut who had a critical accident, was about to die, and they invested $6 million, which back then was $6 billion, into putting robotics in him to survive.
Okay.
Not his whole body, but just different parts of his body. Like it was one of his eyes, his left arm, maybe both legs. But all these robotics gave him superpowers. So he could run real fast, he could jump real high, one of his eyes could see distance. I can't remember. Anyway, and then there was the Bionic Woman spinoff series because that was his girlfriend and she had different. Anyway, so I wanted to be Steve Austin's astronaut and all those powers. And I don't know where I got them, but I do have a very clear memory of in first grade, I had stickers of robotics, like machinery, and I put them on my arm and, you know, but it was underneath my clothes. So I remember going to first grade, standing in line thinking, no one knows. But I'm the Bionic Man because I had all these stickers and just felt really cool. So that's who I wanted to be. And what's interesting is I'm always fascinated with stars and astronomy. And if I had a second career, I'd want to be an astronaut. And that's probably still true. So
that's great.
And what? How about you? And David, if you say I want to be like Jesus, you're going to put me to shame. So you can't.
No.
Okay.
As a kid, I didn't want to be Jesus. So I had this dream that I really liked the idea of being a cowboy.
Ah.
But like you, I also liked space.
Yes.
Okay. So I wanted to be a space cowboy.
Is there a movie called Space Cowboys?
Yeah, but it's different. Like, I literally wanted to have like a horse with an astronaut helmet, and I'd like ride the horse
in space. There's so much with the laws of physics.
Yeah. Well, as a kid, you don't think about that. Yeah, like I wanted to like have a farm in space. I wanted to like, you know, raise cattle in space, but everyone would have like their own like oxygen tank.
It's so funny that it's not like I want to be a farmer.
No. I didn't want to do any of the work of being a farmer or any of the work of being a cowboy or any of the work of being an astronaut.
Okay.
I just wanted to have those things.
Man, I'm just, all these ideas for birthday gifts and stuff are coming up for me now. That's hilarious.
Yeah. So I think growing up, like for example, growing up, I didn't really want to do any work. I just wanted, so like my dad bought me Lego and I'd cry because I thought my toy was broken. And then he was like, you have to build it. And I was like, why would you pay for a toy that you have to build yourself? Like,
is why you're not an engineer.
Yeah, exactly.
That is hilarious. So you're like, who you want to be was like, you create a character or I borrowed a character.
Yeah, like, I think I just like mishmashed different things that I enjoyed.
Interesting.
You know?
Well, that was a great icebreaker question. I learned so much about you. And so, yeah. Okay. What's next then on this?
Yeah. So as we wrap up Romans, you know, normally we ask for a summary of your sermon, which, you know, I guess technically we're doing, but in many ways we're asking for a summary of a summary.
Right.
Right. So
right.
What's kind of the big picture?
Yeah. So if you get a chance to watch or listen to the sermon, please go online and do that. But this was a summary of the book of Romans. What did we learn? So it was an overview. in the live service, I used in 9:30 service, I used the term cliff notes. And I realized you're in college. Is cliff notes even a thing anymore?
It was when I was in.
Because I'm thinking now, think you just go online and read a Wikipedia like article Wikipedia or something. Yeah. Anyway, I gave the Wikipedia article of Romans just to try to connect the main themes and just remind people that this letter was written because of racial tension between Jews and Gentiles in a church. And Paul was addressing a theology of what God has done for us to answer the question of how are we to love one another. And his basic thesis, really, I mean, you can find it in Romans 3:22, that there's no difference between Jew and Gentile. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, and all are justified freely by his grace through the redemption that came by Jesus Christ. So Paul spends a good chunk of time tearing down any pride we have before God, no matter what your racial makeup is, and then spending a similar amount of time building up what Christ or what God has done for us in that brokenness through giving us his righteousness. And so he uses that as that's the mind frame we have to have when we relate across differences. He in particular is addressing race, but certainly any difference in the Christian church that comes up, what's the mindset? And he uses deep theology to shape that. So he basically says, you've got to renew your mind. Don't use outside paradigms to think about why to love neighbor in the church, but to think of the gospel itself. And his big thing is don't think too highly of yourself. Enter into a relationship with humility. You have gifts that God has given you. Use them for the sake of the church. Don't project your gifts on other people and outdo one another with honor. And learn to forgive, when you're hurt. That was the big thing. So that was kind of the big summary there. Yeah.
So if you were to kind of take all of those components, what do you think, like, for UCC specifically, the letter of Romans was read to the church body as this kind of exhortation. So, like, what would our version of that be?
Yeah, I would say two things probably come to mind. One is, praise God. I mean, you can judge any church. Are we diverse enough? Mm-hmm. I definitely don't think our church is diverse enough, but we have diversity, and I'm grateful for that. But maybe an error would be to think because we're diverse in a population that we're living out the gospel. Mm. I think the gospel comes through real relationship and real love. Love must be sincere. Mm. It can't just be, hey, I have a friend who's Chinese, but I don't really hang out with him or know his story or her story. But this whole idea, love has to have hands and feet to it. So I would say God is giving us a season right now with diversity. So I'd want our church to really live into that and learn to listen to one another, learn each other's stories, outdo one another in honor, take on the burdens of the other, but just kind of hear and listen. And I just think of all the different people in our church from so many countries and, even if you're from the U.S., so many ethnic backgrounds. What a gift, but what a shame to just kind of pat ourselves on the shoulders, but rather just say, how do we love each other well with this? That'd be one thing.
Yeah.
And the other, and I won't beat a dead horse, it's just the whole outdoing one another when it comes to ministry and gift passions. Mm. So I've shared before that kind of there's been a historical yuckiness in our church over the years of my ministry is the best and doesn't get enough attention. Mm-hmm. And I would love, and it has changed, but I would love to see that even church, a mindset of, yeah, God has given me a ministry. I'm going to live into it and I'm going to try to figure out how to uplift other ministries. Mm-hmm. I just think that would be so unifying for our church. Those are the two things I think of.
Yeah. So as we think about both of those things, it's like stating them is I guess easy and nice and it's like but to get there that process can have its challenges, right? So as you think about like diversity for our church, one of those challenges is and in some ways Paul does refer to it, like there are these kind of differing social power dynamics among the various ethnicities.
Yep.
And so for us today as a church, how do we kind of reconcile that or kind of build a bridge across some of those power differentials among different ethnicities and things
like that? Yeah. Thanks, David. One thing I didn't address very specifically in the whole series that maybe was an elephant under the carpet, at least it was for me, is Paul kind of equalizes the playing field. We're just as messed up and broken before God and we're just as redeemed. But I didn't address, but there are power inequalities, or you can use a different word, advantage inequalities, resource inequalities among ethnic groups, and that was definitely true in the time of Rome. So What's interesting is Paul is writing to people who could consider themselves privileged or part of the ruling class or privileged class. He's also writing to people who might consider themselves minorities and oppressed. And so he uses this language, but yes, we're all as guilty. And I think sometimes I feel like, man, but does that really give room for the pain for those who maybe grew up as minorities and had to kind of live in a bicultural world? I mean, we both could probably share stories growing up and being called certain things or assumed different things of us because of our racial or ethnic background. And not to, not in church, you know this, not to demonize majority or white culture at all. Most of my mentors, anyway, I'm not going to even go there because I just think that's off the gospel completely. But just to say that there are some things that people of color experience in our country that can feel like an extra burden at times. And so to just say, hey, we're all equal, can maybe diminish some of that. And so I just want to address that. I think the gospel message is still the same, that we're all equally sinful and we're all equally redeemed. So nothing changes about the gospel there. But it's interesting how Paul doesn't ignore those power differentials, but he talks about how do we outdo one another within those. And it's both ways. It's not just a one-way thing. It's not just, hey, those who have more privilege should outdo honor of those who don't. It actually goes both ways because we've all fallen short before God and we've all redeemed by him. So I think that's actually a more God-glorifying model, is to think through how do I outdo my friend, my neighbor, my church, sorry, my church member friend who might have a different ethnic story, whether it be white or black or Chinese or Middle Eastern and so on. Those are my initial thoughts.
I think I hear this a little bit less now, but when I was in college, the idea of tolerance was like always highlighted. And it's almost like, well, the Christian call goes beyond tolerance.
The Christian is love, not tolerance. Tolerance is you can do your thing over there. As long as it doesn't harm me, I'm going to give you space for that. Which is so not the gospel picture.
But I do think, what we're kind of with these kind of power differentials and things is like, but you do have to get through tolerance to get to love.
It's the first step, right?
So
right.
it's like we can't diminish tolerance, but we're just saying like, but that's not a complete picture. Not the end point. That's just like one of the pit stops. And so as we think through maybe some practical steps of like, what could our church family be doing like on any given Sunday to help build this kind of culture of love within the church across diversity. What would you like to see, I guess?
A couple things. First, I just want to say, and this is more probably strategically, and then I'll talk about more personally. Strategically is you can't – a good leadership principle is you can't skip levels. So if we want our church to model certain behaviors, it has to be shown on the staff and elder teams. And so – who's on our teams, the diversity, the quality of relationships in that diversity are really important. So that's work. It takes work. But how we hire, who we hire, who we put on leadership teams needs to have a bring people together who normally in our society wouldn't level with one another, but because of the gospel we do. So it has to be worked out. And Paul Wilson, one of my mentors, says leadership dynamics predicts outcomes. And so that has to happen on a leadership level. But I would say kind of in our church, it's not just Sunday, is Mr. Rogers says it's hard not to love someone once you hear their story. And so I think there has to be a curiosity across all – and this is even I wasn't a coffee. I was hanging out with a guy in our church, a white male, and he just felt like, I feel like there's no place for me in our society. And so now you could say, oh, come on, you know, whatever. But my point here is that even white men have stories and their stories need to be heard. So I just want to make that space because sometimes it's all one way, not the other. But I was going to say to hear each other's stories. And then I think to take on the burdens of the other is a big deal. So you know, David, if I learned for you that as a Chinese male, certain things are more difficult in our society, and I wouldn't know that unless you share that with me because I'm kind of a doofus in that respect. I need you to share that. and you feel from me that I'm carrying that with you. There's something in there that's very loving and bonding, and vice versa. But to do that, there's got to be a curiosity, a question asking. I want to hear your story. Where'd you grow up? How it was like for you? What's good? What's hard? And not being afraid to have those conversations across all ethnic groups, and letting the burden of the other become yours as well. I would love to see that happen more in our church. Yeah. So do you have any thoughts on that?
So it sounds like it's like a normalizing of storytelling in some ways.
Absolutely.
Which can be hard in our society, right? Because I think a lot of times, I feel like our society, you know, it's interesting because I think the storytelling space in our society tends to be social media. But social media is an interesting platform for storytelling because you have to catch someone's attention in, you know, several microseconds.
Right.
And then they'll only give you maybe a couple of seconds on top of that. But, you know, these stories that we all carry, they don't happen in those microseconds. It's a long journey to get there, and there's kind of a greater context. So I do think kind of even within our culture, one of the challenges is even just taking that time to pause and to give space for storytelling. But I think that's something we all long for.
Yeah.
And so something that, it would definitely be loving and bridge some of those gaps. So, and then so as I think about the various kind of leadership structures and strategies that we have, are there things like kind of on your bucket list? So like, let's say like, you know, given complete ideal circumstances, what would you like to see kind of on a strategic level?
Well, I think the fact that our college director is Chinese is not very helpful. I'm just joking. No, I mean, I just, whenever there's a new hire, I think it's good to step back and say, what's the current makeup of our team? Uh-huh. Male, female, ethnic, the whole thing. And think, not only do we need the right called person. I mean, obviously there's gifts and calling and all that, but not to ignore not to miss the forest for the trees, but to step back and go, okay, but who are we as a team and what would be needed in our team to live out the gospel and our relationships with one another? That's probably what I would say. One thing I think I want us to give ourselves some grace to, and this is true for everyone, we tend to be drawn towards, and we tend to draw towards us people who are similar. It's just a human thing. Sure. You know, we group. And there was a long time in my own journey of thinking through loving across boundaries where I just was repulsed by that. Like, oh, your friends better be all looking different than you, or else you're not living. And I think I, you know, came to accept, you know what, like attracts like. Yeah. So I think we all need to be aware of that dynamic. I'm going to draw people to me who just have similar backgrounds, similar interests, similar, you know, whatever. And so are you. So knowing that, it's going to take a little extra effort for us to get to know and love the other because it's not going to be it's not going to flow naturally. We're not going to click naturally at first. But if you're aware of that, like, hey, God tends to draw people to me who are more like me. So there has to be a question. Okay, God, knowing that, how do I love someone who may not be drawn towards me in the church or I'm not drawn towards? What can I do? And it doesn't have to be a huge thing, but just could mean greeting someone on a Sunday that you wouldn't normally greet during coffee hour. We don't have an hour. Coffee and cookie moment. You know, I'm going to go talk to someone who I normally wouldn't talk. It's those micro things that I think could happen that could turn into something more. But initially it's like, I know on my own, I'm not going to be drawn and certain people aren't going to be drawn to me. So I need to, because of the gospel and because these are my brothers and sisters who I'm now related to, I need to get to know them. That'd be my thought. Do you have any thoughts on that, Dave?
I'll share kind of a embarrassing, shameful, I don't know, experience. But I remember when I was in undergrad, I was waiting at the Silo bus stop
at UC Davis.
At UC Davis, waiting to get back to my apartment. And there was no one getting on the bus that I was getting on until one person came up. And he was a very, like, tall and strong and had a frat jacket on. And just very much not a person at that stage in my life that was very like to like.
But now you'd be totally drawn to that type of person, is what you're saying.
Well, Yeah. Anyway, so I remember just sitting on the bus and it was just me and him. And then for whatever reason, I just felt like God was asking me to connect with the person, yeah, at least on say hello or to yeah start some conversation. But I was just so incredibly like scared. Yeah. Like, well, what if, you know, I don't think this guy wants to be bothered. Right, and different right, things yeah like that. And I just remember God kind of asking me the question, like, how much will it take for you to be distracted from what I'm mm-hmm like, what I'm calling you to do? Mm-hmm. And just that realization of like, oh, not much. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
Just this little bit of fear. I'm like looking for excuses to not
yeah
do the thing that I feel yeah like God is calling me to do. And so I just kind of like sat there on the bus, like, sometimes I'd like glance at him and then I was in this kind of like back and forth. Do I engage? Do I not engage? Do I engage? Do I not engage? For several minutes, and then he bus eventually goes, and then he gets off the bus and I never have that conversation. Mm, right.
Yeah.
And so really for that whole week, I was just like, wow, like I really like it really, again, just doesn't take much for me to not do, connect. And
right,
am I for sure, like, had I connected, there would have been this, like, I don't know.
Yeah,
right.
It might have been
like
awkward conversation. Who knows?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But the point is, like, if we're called to something, let's not be so easily
yeah
like dissuaded from pursuing kind of what God's call for us yeah is in totally those moments. And so, yeah, I think and the redemption is, I think, because of the story, it's, it becomes easier for me to think about it now where yeah it's like, oh, I don't want that experience yeah again where yeah I feel like God calls me to connect and then yeah I don't. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking as you were talking, probably my dream for the church is we'd have more John 4 conversations mm where the Samaritan woman talks to Jesus and says, what are you, a Jewish man, mm talking to me, a Samaritan woman, for?
Yeah.
Just, wouldn't that be great to have more? Like, wow, what are you doing talking to? Like, yeah, but like this kind of, it turns into something. Yeah. Now, that's probably an over-idealist thing. Not, sometimes those conversations are really awkward and they don't go anywhere.
Sure,
but,
sure.
But wouldn't it be great if there was a culture of, what are we doing talking to each other?
Yeah,
I
yeah
just think that would be beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know if this is going to be a brilliant segue or an awkward segue, but I would say like our podcast in some senses is like, what are we doing? Because yeah I think when we started,
right,
we didn't know what this yeah would be or what yeah this would turn to. And so as we kind of think through, we finished Romans yeah and our podcast, you know, we were going to go through. So maybe we should share like what we're kind of hoping to do with the podcast.
Yeah. And, yeah. Well, first of all, I think we want to thank you, our loyal listeners. We've had a great crowd of people just listening along, expressing appreciation, laughing with us. People have said part of the joy is just getting to know me and David
yeah
more than the content. Other times it's been stories or deeper reflection. So thank you for your just encouragement. And I was going to use the word fan base, but that's not really what I mean, but just kind of we're in this together. As Dave and I were talking, we were thinking that now that we're finishing Romans, we're going to take a pause in the summer, mm-hmm, and we're going to pray about whether restarting this podcast in the fall when we start our Book of John series. Yeah. So if you haven't heard, starting September 11th, we're starting an 8-week campaign going through the first, I think, 6 chapters of the Gospel of John together. Mm-hmm. We're actually going to go through the whole Gospel of John, God willing, next year, but in terms of small groups, we're going to ask our life groups just to do all those first 8 weeks together. Mm-hmm. So if you're not in a life group, please get involved in one. Reach out to me. If you're in one, your life group leader probably is aware of this, and you may have talked about this already. So anyway, we're going to pray about, do we start the podcast again for the Gospel of John? Mm-hmm. The other thing that's kind of been fun for us is now and then we'll be hanging out with one of you, mm-hmm, and one of you share really a gospel moment in your life where God came through in a way that was pretty significant, or God's doing something in your life. And we just want to share those stories with the whole church. So yeah we may have kind of infrequent podcasts during the summer yeah where we're talking to someone. We want, hey, church, you need to hear the story of what mm-hmm God's doing. So that's the thought for now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We want to normalize storytelling.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. So yes, yeah. And that's a great way. Even though this is not relationship, for you to hear stories of different people in our church, at least it's a step in that direction.
Yeah.
Listening to people's yeah stories. Yeah.
And I don't want to, I guess I don't want to commit for our guests,
yeah,
but I imagine for most of them, for those of you who hear their stories and are impacted by them, like even just seeing them on Sunday, like,
yes,
hey, I loved, you know, what you shared.
Yes.
Or different things
oh, that's
like
great.
That.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Feel free to do that. That's great. All right, David. Okay, I'm going to ask you, what's one thing you appreciate about Romans, uh-huh. and what's one thing you appreciate about our podcast together?
Yeah. This feels like a executive team meeting.
I ask this question a lot at the end of my meeting, so he's like, not again, John.
I think the thing I appreciate about Romans is, I think if you read Romans very quickly and very kind of superficially, mm-hmm. it can seem like a very clinical book. Very kind of theological. And I think the thing I appreciate most about Romans is all of this structure and all of this theology is rooted in relational intimacy and love.
Yeah.
And I think if we kind of lose sight of that, then the book of Romans can actually be a lot of fuel for legalism and different things like that. But that's like the exact opposite of what Paul is trying to do with the book of Romans. And so, I think that's what I appreciate, where it's like, yes, there is a kind of strategic way of thinking through some mm-hmm. of these issues, mm-hmm. but we have to never forget that at the core, it's about that.
Yeah, at the core, it's about Romans 16, when Paul just lists all his friends.
Yeah.
In the church. It's kind of an amazing chapter. Yeah, that's great.
In terms of our podcast, when people have asked me, my answer has genuinely been like, I'm like, oh, I think John and I are friends now. Like,
that's right. We got a lot of quality time together.
And I think a lot of it has to do with the podcast.
Yeah.
And so personally, that's been one of my biggest, getting to know you more on a personal level. As a podcast, it's been fun to just spend time pondering.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think as somebody who...
is a 5 on the Enneagram.
Somebody who enjoys just pondering. I think that's been fun. Yeah.
What there's a running joke. If you guys are Enneagram fans, what exactly David is.
Yeah.
And I'm in competition with another close friend of his on trying to identify who
there's,
he is.
There's three teams. There's team 5, team 3, and team 2. So
that's great. Yeah. I would say, you know, very similar for me that Romans is probably the most theologically rich book, mm-hmm. you know. What has God done for us? And it's a long letter. But like you said, the practical implications are, how are we to love one another well?
Yeah.
And that's been really, really good for me. And I think our podcast, I would definitely echo just getting time with you. It has been fun to go deeper. I've really enjoyed interviewing various people mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah.
And I've enjoyed hearing from you guys too, just saying thank you, or I really appreciated this, or laughing along with us. So we appreciate you as well. All right, you guys. Well, thank you so much for the final Fanus Ding Connect podcast of Romans. We hope to connect with you soon again.